Hello, my name is Tanis. I'm the High Priest of Inner Circle Sanctuary. Mother Coven is here in Las Vegas, and I'm very lucky and thankful that my good friend Kate is in town for an Arm Soulless meeting, and she has driven all the way to Las Vegas from Canada, and I'm going to pick her brain for a while about Arm Soulless and magic and her journey and her thoughts on magic in general. So, Kate, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Awesome. How's your trip been?
It's been fabulous. This is a beautiful country.
Has it been a magical journey?
Of course, it's always a magical journey when you travel to the Southwest.
Awesome. So you're here for the Arm Soulless meeting, where there's members from all around the world. It's an international hermetic theurgic group. And that's how I met you in 2013.
That's right.
So that's what, 6 years now?
6 years, yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. So can you tell us a bit about Arm Soulless? You joined the Arm Soulless before I did.
Yeah, I joined the Arm Soulless in 2011. I actually have something that I wrote down. It was November 11th, 2011, that I actually sort of had the call, so to speak, to come to this path. I'd been seeking for a long time, and when I first read, I think, Mysteria Magica, one of the Denning Phillips books, it just, as they say, it dinged all my bells. It was something that really appealed to me.
And the Arm Soulless, what would you say the focus of the organization is?
So it's a Neoplatonic initiatory order that is really focused on carrying forward the golden chain of the pagan philosophers. So essentially what we believe in predates Christianity. Goes back to some of the early philosophers such as Proclus, Plotinus, Iamblichus, who did a lot of very serious study. And then, of course, as it always is in occult circles or communities such as that, esotericism, it's had its sort of heyday, its slowdown, its public and then private. So there's a golden chain that sort of continues forward from that. We look to Alexandria, where the Ptolemaic Greeks and or the Ptolemaic Egyptians, so to speak, the Greek Egyptians were melding their beliefs with the Chaldean beliefs from the East, and really making a good mesh of different magical perspectives, and that sort of went. With the incursion of maybe that's not the right word, but with the rise of Christianity and the burning of the Alexandrian Library and the murder of Hypatia by the mob, really kind of put it beneath the surface again for a while. And then in the Renaissance came Cosimo Medici, who sent people to Constantinople to bring books from there to Florence, Italy, to translate them. And he had Marsilio Ficino, who did a lot of the translations, and the Medicis formed the Careggi Institute. So they basically brought it back in at the Renaissance time to continue that golden chain. And then later, the Arm Soulless was formed by an antiquarian society in 1897. And so we have a line of past masters from that time, brought forward all the information. So it sort of has a scholarly angle to it, a theurgic angle to it, and certainly practical workings as well.
Right. It's not all theoretical. There is a lot of ritual practice and performance.
There certainly is. Very much of the work is very often there's daily practices. Practices run on cycles that are linked to the moon and to the solar wheel of the year. We look to, I believe, the organization when it first started was basically they were looking at the solar wheel, so Arm Soulless, the golden sun. So we're basically solar worshipers from a pagan philosophical perspective.
Right. I've told people who have asked that it is like ceremonial magic for pagans, because so many people tend to think of Rosicrucian type of and Golden Dawn type of rituals and stuff, but this is almost completely pagan material.
Yes, I would suggest a pagan being sort of the broad stroke of anything that's not what I call the big three, not Christian, not Judeo-Christian, not Islamic, not Jewish. So outside of the monotheistic traditions, very much pantheistic or polytheistic, and not for people who don't want to do the work. So there's certainly a lot of work involved, a lot of research. We have access to resources that are scholarship from the last over 100 years, that with various members over the years, when we do work, we record it and we share it within the order, so that we actually have a large corpus of, we look to the Corpus Hermeticum from the ancients, and we are creating our own corpus through research, experimentation, and ritual.
Right, and it's international, right? There's members all over the world and houses all over the world.
There are houses all over the world. A house is basically a group, what we call, what modern Wiccans would call a coven, where people get together in a familial way. So we consider ourselves an occult family. So they're all over the world. We have people practicing in various languages. So English, French, Spanish, Portuguese. So we have that opportunity to, so there's houses in Africa, there's houses in South America, there's houses in North America, Spain, England. So it's kind of wherever you are, you can pretty much find your way to the Orm Solis.
And internet communications for people who are not near a house.
Yes, so the order does have a website. And on the website, there is a lot of information about the order, all of the way that it works, what theurgy is, what an initiatory order is. And that's at ormsolis.org. And it is it's sort of the gateway into the order. And you can join the order through what we call the pronaos, which is essentially the porch of the temple. So you have to learn and do the rituals and do some reading and basically do the work. And then if you proceed through that, then there is levels of initiation which bring people further into the mystery.
So speaking of, I know that you've done other practices as well. What is it that you find with your Orm Solis practices? What is it that you like best about it?
Well, I think when I consider the way of that it dinged my bells, so to speak, I'd spent probably 25 years searching through many of the neo-pagan modern world, have lots of friends, learned a lot. The thing I think I like the most, I'm a Gemini, so I like to think. I like to research some of my favorite things. And certainly you can do that in any order. You can do that in any group. You can do that on your own as a solitary in a group. But I found that it was very... The pagan philosophers really resound with me. So the things that they say, things that were written in Greece or Alexandria, or that 2,000 years ago, are still relevant today. And I think the importance of that, the relevance through time, that there are timeless ideas that are not, they're not based on speculation, or they're based on investigation, experimentation, and observation. And certainly philosophy is not all provable, but there's certainly things that are still applicable today and ways of living. I really like that it's a very morally based tradition that is, you know, it's very simple to be kind to one another. And very often in modern pagan circles, you find, unfortunately or fortunately, the ego aggrandizement, right? There's a lot of persona worship. And our grandmaster is not my guru. I am my guru. So I like that.
Yeah. I would definitely say that the rituals that I've done with Arm Solis were the most effective in bringing me face to face with my own personal gnosis of specific gods that were invoked in that ritual. Would you say the similar? Did you have similar experiences?
I would definitely agree with you, and I would say that from the very beginning, it puts you through an alchemical process of your in the self-realization. So instead of potentially creating an illusory or an illusion, it actually parts the veil of that illusion, and you really learn about yourself. Certainly it's not for everyone, because it does, it tends to expose the things that you need to deal with. So I probably came into it with a lot more exploded ego than I have today. I think that it made me humble, made me understand that you can't know everything, and that, you know, in the libraries of mankind, there are many things to look at, and this is a good lens.
Very cool. I like how you said that. So, magic in general, paganism, Wicca, where did it start for you?
So, I didn't even know what a pagan was. But when I was young, as I said, I like to research things, and I've always been interested in astrology and tarot. So by the time I was 18, I was already, knew how to do an astrology chart. I was playing with tarot cards. As a child, we used to play with the Ouija. You know, it's like at play in the world of esotericism.
Yeah.
And when I was living in Toronto, Canada, I had pagan friends, or met pagan friends through my work, and two of them got married, and the ceremony was a hand fasting. And of course, didn't even know what a hand fasting was. So that was my first circle, and I was so intrigued, because I grew up on a farm. I've always been a tree hug and dirt worshiper before I knew that there was such a thing. And so I asked my friends who were being married, being hand fasted, how can I get to know that woman, the priestess who did your ritual? What's the best way to get to know her? And my friend said, ask her to teach you. And so I did. And the rest, as they say, is history. She was a solitary witch and of the British tradition. And she was someone who had circled very early on with the Wiccan Church of Canada. Her name is on the establishing documents of the church as a witness. And shortly thereafter, parted ways with them because she prefers solitary work. But she was able to establish me in the fundamentals. And I went through a process of training with her. I still have that 3-inch thick binder of all of the work and the homework. And something that I also really liked was, I like homework. I like to hear, this is something, go and research it some more and tell me about it later. And so I worked with her until my initiation. And then, as it should be, she saw initiation not so much at, it's a culmination of your studies and the achievement of the work, but it's also a gateway into more work.
Yeah.
So the work never stops. That's right. It's lifelong work. And so I'm still in touch with her, but she is not my teacher anymore. So I sort of went out into the world. I think that was 25 years ago.
Wow.
And it's funny how initiation can have that effect. I gave up my apartment, gave up my job, bought a van, and took my first road trip to the Southwest. So I'm no stranger to driving all the way across the country. I love the desert. I love the mountains. I love the ocean. I'm going to be going all the way to the West Coast on this trip. So from that, I sort of started my own exploration. I called myself for a long time just a ritualist, because I just would do a lot of ritual. And then I found I was circling with a group. And unfortunately, as it is in many groups, that one of the people who was in charge of that group did not feel that my initiation was valid, because I was initiated by a woman.
Oh.
And there is a...
Heaven forbid.
Old school, exactly. Old school way of showing that you're a woman, you should be initiated by a man.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a falling out with that group. And they basically sent me to the Wiccan Church of Canada to go and have your curriculum. So I circled I went to the Wiccan Church of Canada and was a dutiful student, attended their classes on a regular basis, handed in the homework, which I think was relatively rare sometimes. And through that was invited into a working group with Richard and Tamara James, who were the high priest and high priestess of the Wiccan Church of Canada, which I felt at the time was a great honor to be brought into a private circle,
right,
with the head of that group, and circled with them for many years. And that was specifically a training group, so it wasn't officially a coven. There was a coven that the high priestess still maintains, and I did circle with them when there was a specific practical work that could be done, house busting, that sort of thing, where it was kind of all hands on deck work.
Yeah.
So I certainly helped with a lot of those sorts of things. And and then I ended up moving out of the city. So yeah, it's a long story, Brian, but went from that. And I, during all that time, I was going to Wiccan Fest, which is one of the largest festivals, has been around for about 30 years in Canada. So that was some place where you got to meet a lot of people with different paths, and in a social setting, where a family setting, so people could go with their kids. It wasn't a hedonistic thing so much. And got to meet lots of people through that. Again, doing my own personal work, doing some shamanistic stuff. It was just testing and tasting, as so many do. That's what seekers do. I really think that it's important that everybody find their own way. And, tried out voodoo, had a toe into all things. But nothing really rang with me until an old friend of mine came to visit and said, "Hey, look what I found." And it was one of the Mysteria Magica books of Denning and Phillips. And he came to visit, and we did one of the rituals, and it was effective, and it was beautiful, and I loved it, and I found my way of return.
Nice.
Yeah, and I really think that, as with many orders, people come and go.
Right.
And I think all of those people who I know who've come to the Orin Solis and for whatever reason have decided to discontinue have instead found their path. So I see the Orin Solis also as a way where you find your way.
Sure.
And because there's just so much out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard. I always tell people maybe to search into their own culture first. So what's in your blood? And, I'm sort of my ancestry, I'm a second generation Canadian with English, Irish, and Scottish roots. So explored Celtic, explored all of those things, but they didn't, many of that is local, like the genus Lucai, right? So if you're not there, it's not so much. I've done native indigenous things. I've been to powwows and moon ceremonies, and that also is beautiful. And being a child of Canada, those spirits talk to me, but I'm not an indigenous person, so I don't believe in appropriation. So I prefer, I've recently found a sweat lodge and a sacred fire that I can attend. That sort of gives me the back to that dirt worshiping tree hugger roots. So, but I also like the columns of the temple. I like that mix of in Alexandria and the Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so beautiful. And I've always, even when I was in school, really loved the Greeks. All the Greek gods, the Greek pantheon sings to me.
Yeah.
And when you mix that with Egyptian and then throw in some Chaldean magic,
right,
it really, it speaks to the, I think the world soul, the psyche, what people would call the Akashic records or Jung called the collective unconscious. Those symbols and, all of the planetary astrology, like all the things that harken back to the things that attracted me in the first place, they're all there.
Yeah.
And when those things speak to you, you want to know their language. And this is a good way to find it.
Do you have a preference for group work or solo work? You just enjoy the balance of both, working at home by yourself and then getting together with people?
I think it's important to do solitary work in that there is a lot of self-reflection. There's a lot of things, especially if you're doing solid esoteric work, it's going to bring up some things that are very often hard to face. I've many tears over the years, much inner joy. When you have to face something about yourself, say, I'm a very strong, independent woman. I've always done, worked in careers that were in male-dominated, so I strongly associated with Athena and all of those very strong warrior goddesses. But, then you sort of hide your soft side.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes those are things where you're actually projecting that strength to hide an inner weakness.
Mm.
And when you do this work, that inner weakness will show. And acknowledging and accepting that weakness then becomes true strength, not the falsified strength.
Right.
So when I was first learning in Wicca, for instance, I was taught you have your personality and then you have your magical persona. And it was almost like never the twain shall meet, almost.
Hmm.
Not quite, but when you put on your magical robes, you're not yourself anymore, you're your magical persona. I understand mm-hmm. that. But if you use that magical persona to then mask or hide even from yourself the issues that you actually have to get to psychologically about yourself to truly grow and have self-realization, then that's really a disservice to your soul.
Sure.
But if you go through the hard work to dig into that, that is something that's done in solitude.
Yeah.
But then when you bring that out to a group and can share that in vulnerability and truth and say, this is what I got from this, and that self-realization becomes a self-exposure, and there is strength in that, because if you can be yourself, tell your own truth, and know that it's true because you did the work to find out that it's true.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that in group. You could all together meditate and have everybody, certainly there's been many times I've been in a group circle with 100 people and I'm having my personal experience. That's very, yeah. very valid. I just think that we go deeper when we're by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also something about that group mind, the camaraderie, the family that you create in a group. So it's a good balance to have both. I think you build the strength alone, but then you become a cornerstone of something that's bigger when you're strong.
You're able to bring something to the table.
That's right. Hmm.
Do you still, as part of your practices, you know, do a spell one night, Wiccan or witchcraft or something like that, because it's something that you need, and then the next day you're doing an armed solace ritual, and then on Friday you're at the sweat lodge type of thing?
No. I think that my personal opinion, spells wear off. Sometimes it takes a long time. Sometimes you forgot something. I've recently been going through some things personally that I realized, oh, that's actually a spell I did on myself before I even knew what a spell was. The ways that we set patterns in our life. And I believe personally, I've never done love magic. Oh, actually, no, sorry. Once, that didn't work out. So, no. If I want a job, I don't light a candle. I put together my resume and apply for jobs. So I'm a very practical person that way. I don't think magic is for winning at cards or finding the love of your life. Or I think magic is for personal self-realization. And it's maybe a little sad that it's come to, many people think they come to magic and they want to be Gandalf. And I have still to meet someone who's Gandalf. So I don't do spells, but I certainly will do the spell of gratitude and, you know, smell a flower and see the beauty and magic in nature. I certainly have that kind of appreciation. Ritual work is work, and it is also beautiful and creates a stronger connection to deity, and through that allows, in theurgy, it's not worship, it is seeking to sort of meet the gods halfway. So to rise up ourselves towards more divinity, to be more of our divine self, we have to purify and clear the gunk.
Yeah.
And boy, this world pours the gunk on you.
Doesn't it?
And if you use a spell to get rid of that gunk, the gunk's going to come back when the spell wears off. Mm-hmm. Because you've just really pushed it away. You haven't actually dealt with it. So I believe in dealing. And sweat lodge and sacred fires is a way of, that's really singing gratitude, right? That's a way of thanking, connecting with the ancestors, standing on the bones of those who came before us, and appreciating them in a well-connected, heartfelt circle. So I've also had that in Wicca. And other things that I've done, I just don't, I guess the Aurum Solis is my personal work, and certainly I support the order in many ways. The sacred work around a fire with other women in moon lodges, that sort of thing, is my way of being social. Mm. With people. As many of us well know, when you're an esoteric, you're sort of 1 in 100 in the groups of people, unless you go to festivals where it's 100 to 1, and not everybody you can have the conversations like we're having right now.
Right.
Yeah, so it's good to know people that you don't have to explain where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And you can feel that heart pull to something and talk about it, and people who understand that don't think you're crazy.
Right. Well, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, I'd like to talk about Tarot Star and more about the gods, and I'd like to get your opinions on magic, the magical community, the future of magic. So we'll be right back. And I am back with Kate after a quick break where we talked about some more interesting things about gods and magical orders. And one of the things that Kate brought up a couple years ago that I was really interested in was Tarot Star, world famous witchcraft author and one-time Las Vegas resident who I missed by months when I was first stationed in Las Vegas in 1989. He had just left for Canada. And so I have never met him in person, and I'd like to talk to you about him and so you can tell us all what he's like.
Sure. So Tarot Star, I consider him an elder. And he is a man who was recruited by the Occult Shop in Toronto, which was the storefront of the Wiccan Church of Canada. And so he has been an occult reader, tarot reader, for probably 50 years. Wrote many books that are still extant. He just recently, a couple of years ago, published another book with Black Moon Publishing of The Sacred Pentagraph, which is a full system of, it's Wicca as a lodge. So basically what he did with the Circle of Star Meadow here in Las Vegas, and the Church of All Saints.
Church of Mystic Science.
There you go, yeah. The All Saints Church of Mystic Science. He was one of the founders of that. And they were what I like to call the old guard of modern Wicca. They were doing interesting ritual, and I believe the system that he created was essentially kind of done through ritual, through channeling, through bringing that down and understanding. He understood, even in those early days, that there needed to be structure around putting together a Wiccan system. And so he applied the experience and the idea of a lodge, similar to, say, the Golden Dawn or Masonry, with a structure that then has all of the, everything from bringing a child under the protection of the gods right through to a funeral. So all of the things. And he put together the Book of the High Priest, the Book of the High Priestess, under a system called the Sacred Pentagraph. And that book is now available. But because he was a tarot reader for so long, some of his earlier works, spellcraft books, etc., were actually from him doing readings and having to come up with a magical prescription for people to take home with them to deal with whatever issue it was that they were having a reading about, or they were facing something in their life. What do I do about this? And again, as I said earlier, it's a lot of personal self-work. But even if you're lighting a candle with intent to say, I have this thing that's making me sad, or I have this repeating pattern in my life, I need to break this pattern, or those kinds of things, that is physical, practical work towards personal work. It may not go as deep. It may take you deeper. I think that that is something I really believe in, personal responsibility. So he really brought forth that, yes, I can tell you that this will help you, but then you have to go and be personally responsible to go and do that work for it to help you.
Uh-huh.
So I always appreciate his very straightforward and direct way. And he has done a lot of research into the history of modern paganism, the history of comparative religion. For a while there in Toronto, he was giving some courses that I took that were really great in doing that comparative. Where does this come from? And I think that that's a really important thing too, that a lot of neo-pagans miss if they don't go to original sources.
Right.
So another reason I love the Aurum Solis, it's original source work. And, you know, you can't just read a book and suddenly, poof, you're a witch. There's a lot of work involved, and he understood that, and to give people a system to do that. And one of the wonderful things about the system that he does, when you go through work in modern neo-paganism, generally it's not like you get a certificate. You don't graduate. You get initiated. Nobody's going to give you a certificate and say, maybe some do, I'm not familiar with many, that will say, oh yes, you've achieved this. Here's your paper. His system does that because yeah. he thinks that even if someone goes through a system, achieves the level of initiation, and then for whatever reason, as I said, I have moved on from things in the past, moves on. If you don't have a piece of paper that says you did that work, it's like going back into a black belt or a green belt or whatever, going back into the dojo again in karate, and you have to start at white belt again.
Right.
So it's never a bad thing to review. It's never a bad thing to redo. It's just a matter of that validation of what you got to.
Yeah.
So Tarot Star System does that. And he also, many of his early works give those spell workings, those things that people can use for personal self-development.
Right.
And without expecting someone else to fix your problems for you.
Right.
You have to take them yourself. So he is an elder. He is an older man now. So we're glad that he is publishing. He does have a website, witchworld101.com.
Is it 101 or 109?
Oh, it's 109. You're absolutely right, because that was the address of the occult shop in Toronto, was 109.
Nice.
We always called it 109. That was where they had their temple and their store. They've moved now, but...
So witchworld109.com.
That's right.
Right.
So it has some of his works on it, and it certainly it gives some background of the tradition that was born here in Las Vegas, in the wonderful basin of the desert here. It's so beautiful.
I thought
beautiful.
You were going to say the grasshoppers. The grasshoppers were everywhere this week.
Hey, I had one land on me today, so it wasn't quite the locust swarm I was expecting, but that's okay. We like the heat, so do they. Yeah, so he is, he's in his twilight years, as so to speak, is still producing work, still working on manuscripts, still researching, is someone who has maybe been known on chat boards or for years would insert himself potentially into those places, and oftentimes would get sort of, no, we don't want you around here, because... He would ask the hard questions.
Sure.
You know, when someone posits their theory, he's the kind of person who would say, so what's your source for that?
Mm-hmm.
And if the source was your own personal meditation, like anyone who does magic needs to keep a very healthy skepticism.
Sure.
There is a lot of illusion that we create for ourselves, that the world itself creates. And you just can't take everything at face value. And he never does.
Right.
And I think that he instilled that in me. And it has been a good way to check myself, to make sure that, you know, what I'm getting into is not something that's just going to lead me down a path to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Because as our grandmaster in the Aurum Solis says, don't waste your time. Really, it's about doing as much self-progression in this life so that when we come back, I believe in reincarnation, when we come back, we can start again where we left off,
mm-hmm.
instead of having to come back and struggle through it all again.
Right.
So I would suggest that Tarot Star has done a lot of work in this life, and he will certainly, when he moves on into the next life, will likely come back as a very, very curmudgeonly young child, because I call him a curmudgeon. I used to run a magazine called Wick and Candles for 7 years in Canada. And it was quite a popular with the community there.
Is it still available?
Well, back it's been, there are some back issues in a tub somewhere that are sort of set to be fired up. But I would suggest that for years I wanted to create a website with that as an archive.
Right.
He was a columnist.
Yeah.
And we called it Curmudgeon's Corner.
Oh, how funny.
So he would, of course, have the opportunity to espouse his wisdom to the pagan community and maybe direct them in certain ways.
You know, what's funny is we had a publication back in the 90s called Inner Circle News. And at one time it was newsprint, and then for a while it was Xerox copies. And one of our elders, when we were at Temple, was a Gardnerian witch named Tom Doherty, and he was the editor of Inner Circle News for a while, and he had contacted Tarot Star in Canada, probably knew him before he moved, and Tarot Star wrote a couple articles for Inner Circle News while that was being published.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's interesting.
And that was the thing with him, is he shares his knowledge and wisdom. Yeah. So many want to hold that back until you've done something for them or whatever. He shares. And we also had, he would write poetry about, in rhyme, of course, you know, spake in rhyme, about some of the historical pagans or historical witches who maybe weren't even witches, but the one about the, I can't recall her name specifically, but that legend of the woman who bathed in child's blood, or, you know, these crazy things that come out of
Bathory?
Bathory, yes. I think it is Isabel or Elizabeth Bathory. And that was probably a legend, not necessarily true, but he would write poetry to remind people of some of these early stories, and we would always have some good feedback from what he had to say, and certainly there are still people using his early spell workbooks.
Oh yeah.
And there is now actually an extant coven now that has been created around his
Wolfhurst or something like that.
Yes.
Seen them on it through his website, witchworld109.com, and on Witchvox, because they have a listing in Pennsylvania.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So there is an extant coven that is now working his system. So, and I just to mention, dropping names here and there, that Sybil Leek, famous of the Old Guard witches, we would circle with them when she was in Las Vegas for whatever convention, etc. So she was involved loosely in the creation of the system. And, of course, Charmaine and Steve Day of the Bell Book and Candle here in Las Vegas, of historic renown. It doesn't exist anymore. But they all circled together, and Tarot Star was one of the founders of the Bell Book and Candle. And, so a very interesting character, to be sure.
And when did you meet him?
So I met him because he was part of the Wiccan Church. He was never part of the church. He was sort of, he worked at the occult shop, which was their storefront. He still reads there today. And was someone who, because he's a curmudgeon, kind of not ignored, not revered, kind of the witch at the edge of the village kind of style. He was very serious. So many people didn't want to have anything to do with him.
Yeah.
So I'm the kind of person, if someone does, if there's someone who has wisdom, a little curmudgeonly, I was attracted to that because I see in that seriousness and wisdom and kind of a hard nut to crack, but worth the time to crack it.
Mm-hmm.
So my first teacher was a solitaire who was not involved in the community. He has been a solitaire adjacent to the church. So certainly did a lot of ritual with the church. He would do the Dumb Supper, as I understand used to do in Vegas, and had to rent a convention hall to do that because they were so popular.
Yep.
The Dumb Supper being essentially a Halloween or Samhain observation where you are able to have a silent supper with an ancestor. And he has an interesting way of doing that where there is an invitation sent out ahead to give notification to this to the spirit being invited. And so it's not a seance. It's not something where we're calling you now.
Right.
It's something, it's an event where the ancestor is invited and then there is preparatory.
Oh, yes.
And then you have the Dumb Supper where essentially you eat a feast with your ancestor from the past that has passed over. And he also, so if there was ever a ritual that required Hades, he was usually pressed into a service.
Wow.
So I remember I was telling a story recently about a ritual that we did. I was not involved in the ritual, but someone had written a ritual for oracles to the dark gods person, And the way that the temple was set up, you had someone, you paid the ferryman and you crossed the River Styx and you could have a reading from Persephone, Hecate, or Hades. And of course there were minions up there serving wine to Hecate and fruit juice or whatever to Persephone. And they were serving Hades, who did not like wine, water. And I will always remember after that ritual, he came over and he was so curmudgeonly, he was like, I cannot believe it, what is going on? And I said, what's the matter? They were serving me water. So I'm the kind of person who keeps a flask of whiskey in my hip pocket. So I was able to placate Hades that night with some whiskey. Not everybody wants to be around, not everyone wants to be around people like that or is interested in soaking that up, taking the time to get to know someone so that they will actually share their wisdom, because most people kind of want that. Maybe that's not fair to say most people, but many people I've seen in the many years I've been doing this, they want the quick fix. They want the shiny. They want, oh, I read this book and I'll know what to do. Many are not prepared to do the work. And the work sometimes involves taking the time to get to know someone and letting them get to know you so that the secrets can be shared. Because secrets are secrets for a reason. Mystery is mystery for a reason. And you can't just get there by taking a bus.
Well, and I can definitely say, Inner Circle Sanctuary gives out spells and suggests spells from Tarot Starr's early works. We use some of his invocations from his Book of Shadows. I love that book. And you were talking about his poetry. It's not just his spoken lines, but a lot of the directions are written in rhyme. So the whole book is poetic and artistic and a lot of fun. It's not what you expect. Most people are so used to doing Jeschel circles to attract and Widdershin circles to banish, and Tarot Starr does them the opposite. And he explained it to me that negative is what brings things to you. So do a Widdershin's anointing of a candle to bring money or luck or love to you, and do Jeshel anointing to get things away from you. And similarly with the casting of the circle. So I've done that a couple times. The ring that he wrote about in the Sacred Pentagraph book is one of the coolest rituals ever, with the candles in your hand and drawing gigantic pentagrams and all that kind of stuff. So it's really interesting stuff.
So he certainly believed many people will do the quarters with a pentacle. And I was taught to, it's a portal. So it's a window. Well, Tarot Star likes to build doors.
Uh-huh.
So he's not just saying, here's a window, peer into my ritual.
Right.
He says, here's a door, come. So, yes, very effective. And again, the Widdershins part, I think it freaks people out. I've certainly been at festivals and circled the fire the wrong way, so to speak. And people are like, what are you doing? I'm drawing in the energy.
Yeah.
No, you're not. You're banishing it. Really?
Yeah.
How does it feel to you?
Yeah.
I think that that's part of it too. And he would say that. And in the Aurum Solis, we say that. You want to know something? Experiment.
Right.
Yeah. Just don't hurt yourself.
Yeah. It's a really interesting system. And the system that he writes about in Sacred Pentagraph, it's the kind of stuff that were a group of people to do it, I don't think they would be... how do I put this nicely? It wouldn't necessarily break down and disappear all of a sudden. It's kind of like the thing that we talk about in our coven. We're only here, A, because our priests and priestesses were so tough on us, and B, because they had a system in place. When problems arise, how do you handle it? When it's this month, what are you doing? When it's this Sabbath, what are you doing? And the Sacred Pentagraph is a great template for that. It's like having a constitution pre-written for your coven, and bam, you can just work it.
Well, and interestingly, you'll be looking forward to now, there will be another book coming out. So the Sacred Pentagraph was written in a Wiccan Lodge system in five books. The first three books are within the first published book.
Yeah.
And the next two books are with the publisher now. I have no idea a release date, but that will be a book of Espats, which is the moons, and a book which he calls the Cornucopia, which is again a further collection of spell works and practical magic that can be applied, that he collected from his own prescriptions in doing as an occult reader for over 50 years. So we are very lucky to have these connections with people who have done this work,
yeah,
and have that legacy to provide for us, that I think is so important. When I first went to my first teacher and she said, why do you want to do this? I didn't say for power. I didn't say so I would get what I want. I said, so that I can carry on the knowledge.
Mm.
And I think that I still, to this day, in the carrying forward the golden chain of the Aurum Solis, I still have the same purpose.
Yeah.
And to carry that knowledge forward is so important. To carry the knowledge forward and to have that be your priority means your own personal benefit is not the priority.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good litmus test.
Yeah.
For people in magic.
So, like, little things about, like, what does he smoke? What brand does he smoke?
I don't know. Probably the cheapest one on the shelf. I don't know that he would be brand... I don't know that he...
Really?
I don't Not know like that he a would one be brand...
Loyal?
No.
My priestess, Lady Morgana, was a Marlboro 100 lady for the longest time. And if you deviated from that, You know, if she had you go to the store with some cash to get her cigarettes and you came back with Marlboro Reds, or you saw her box and it was white and gold, so you got her lights or something. Oh my God, she would lose her mind.
That's great. I was in my hotel gift shop the other day, and I've always liked Marlboros, and I was there, but they're such a strong cigarette. So I said, oh, let's try some of those Marlboro 100s. This is Las Vegas, after all. So yeah. I will now remember to smoke those in honor of your priestess.
There we go. Now, near the end of her days, she was smoking Indian spirits because of the whole natural thing or whatever. Yep. So, but the whole smoking thing, funny. Not so prevalent in our coven as it was back in the 90s. In her shop, Bell Book and Candle, Cat and Cauldron before that, smoking was virtually encouraged. Hmm. And I was smoking in those days. It was, yeah.
It certainly has become a much more antisocial habit now. I mean, here in Canada, it's pretty much illegal anywhere except your own home. Here in Las Vegas, as you know, it's everywhere. So I have some of those American spirits in my purse.
Right.
Not to promote smoking.
No, of course not. Now, speaking of the social aspect, what are your thoughts on the magical, pagan, theurgic community, occult community these days? Where's it at? What's the state of the occult these days?
My goodness. So I have been not actively participant in the public pagan culture in Canada for a while now, in that I have refocused into the Aurum Solis, which is, as I said, Neoplatonic initiatory tradition. So it's not like it doesn't fit, but there aren't a lot of people that I'm necessarily going to have the kind of conversations I want to have. But I do see that there is a movement towards more. Now, I will say that I'm Canadian, so it seems that our community is potentially a little different from the American community. I don't circle in the in the American community. But I would suggest there seems to be a more return to scholarship, return to what were the elders doing? What was the old guard, so to speak? In that, I think maybe over the last 20 years there was sort of a turn towards buy that book, do the spells, have a circle, like when the movie The Craft came out. I watched in festivals the scene kind of changed from being more familial to being more hedonistic. I would suggest that when I first started about 30 years ago, when you met people, they asked who your initiator was. They wanted to know your lineage. And that was how you validated yourself. That fell away pretty quickly as so many books flooded the market of lots of very valid information. Yet when I was started, if you wanted to learn, the books were there.
Mm-hmm.
But why learn from a book when you can learn from a human being who's done it and has experience, and you can ask questions, and I don't understand this part, please explain. Even, oh, I've read this book, what does this mean? I sort of saw that fall away, because then there was the rise of eclecticism.
Right.
And certainly I always called myself like an eclectic ritualist, because I hadn't picked sort of which path I was going to stick to. And I really see Wicca as a formula you can pour anything into, really. So, but I think what that did is it really diluted the knowledge. It really diluted the work. It diluted those lineages, those traditions. I think, I believe in organic tradition. I believe in the idea that these, you know, I read philosophy from very long ago. It's still applicable today, but it still has to be updated to match our world today. And I think that people are now getting to maybe understand that it does take work. You can't just read a book. You want those sources. What is that? So I think that there's more of that return, I hope. Mm-hmm. There's more of a return to that. In Canada, I just learned that this year will be the last year, but some friends who own a campground called, I won't even promote it because it's going to be closing down, but they started an event called a Culticon.
Uh-huh.
Where they were bringing in speakers.
Yeah.
To, you know, Tarot Star was a speaker and came and spoke about magic, spell work. And so this, to me, was a sign that, you know, Wiccanfest, the longtime festival, always had speakers come in. But it was less and less people going to workshops, more and more people wanting to dance naked around the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Which, hey, that's fun too, right? We want to fully participate in the experience of our life. But I found that there was more scholarship.
Uh-huh.
And so I hope that we get to a point where we find more respect for the old guard, for those trailblazers in the neo-pagan movement that really brought things forward. You know, the Starhawks, the Tarot Stars, the Denning and Phillips of the Aurum Solis, like all of those, you know, the Raymond Bucklands and Scott Cunningham, like people who, Paul Hewson,
yeah,
who had some really good things, and then other people came and wrote books based on what they said, but maybe didn't include those sources.
Right.
One of the first things I learned and was taught was, always claim your sources.
Right.
Always know, because that's part of the lineage. That's part of the chain of knowledge. That's part of... So I have things in my original binder of all of my work from my first teacher, and it has up in the corner from such and such, this page, this book.
Yeah.
And, I was professionally trained as a journalist, so I want to do that anyways. But the whole idea of if you lose the source... You've disconnected it. I'm also a museologist. I used to run a museum. I have my certificate of museum studies, and we call that, it's an agent of deterioration known as disassociation.
Huh.
So if you have, the way it's used in museums is if you have, say, an artifact that is in three pieces. If you lose a piece, it's disassociated from, and then the two pieces that aren't connected to that third piece, it loses its meaning.
Right.
So if the neo-pagan community continues to disconnect from its original sources, it will cease to be strong.
Mm-hmm.
So touching back to those original sources and not being frozen in a box of time that, oh, this is the way it's done, and this is the way it has to be done, and this is the way it's always done.
The only way, the right way.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, maybe I shouldn't be passing judgment on people. Yet, oh, here's an interesting perspective, here's a new way. Oh, let's experiment with that.
Right.
We can still maintain the original, and we can make it better. It's like even the Christians, when they rewrote the Bible, they took out the these and thous and put in you, right? So we can update our language, we can update our perspective, but things still work the way they work. And so I hope there is a return to that. It seems to me there is a... If you do work and there is no substance, people will just move on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think even with our world today, people want more depth. Because everything is so surface.
Right.
And if you actually choose to take a magical path, you want depth. Because surface skipping won't get you anywhere.
Mm. Not for long. No, it won't. Well, I was going to ask you what do you think of the future of the occult culture? But it sounds like you answered that, and that sounds
well. And I think the future. I think I would like to see for the future is the surcease of infighting or better than or comparison, and just understand that we live in a world woven with magic. There are many strings to take and follow that path through the many colors of weave.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate when we see, you know, challenges between individuals over group control, or that's not right, that's not the way it should be done, this is our tradition, this is the way it's done. Even the ancient pagan philosophers, you know, when they talk about the sun revolving around the earth. Well, we know science tells us that's not true. So you wouldn't stick to that theory. Right. It's the same with magic. If you find a better way, experiment. Is it really a better way? Oh, it is. It works. Let's do that.
Yeah.
And frankly, secrets are secrets and mystery is mystery, and those things should be protected. But I'm also kind of copy left, not copyright. I really believe that there is room to share a little bit more of a peek in and explain to people that it is work and it's worth it for the goodness of your soul and why are we here? You know, isn't that what everybody asks?
Absolutely.
Why are we here?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I believe, my opinion, we're here to learn, to grow, and to evolve. And that takes work.
Right.
So, future of the neo-pagan, let's hope we can all buckle down to some work. Because, you know, I think if we were all working together, it would greatly benefit us all, the planet, and maybe open some more hearts to understanding between all religions.
Very good. I like that. Well, I think that's a good place to stop as well. So thank you very much, Kate. We talked a bit about Aurum Solis, and maybe what's the website again? Aurumsolis.org. Aurumsolis.org. And Tarot Star's website is witchworld109.com. And my name is Tanis from Inner Circle Sanctuary, and our website is innercirclesanctuary.com. We're on Facebook and every other social media site. And so Tarot Star, you got Tarot Star on Facebook a while back, so everybody can hit him up and be friends and see what he writes about. So thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me tonight. It was a blast. I loved visiting with you and having Thai food and talking about this good stuff.
It was a great pleasure to be here.
And I hope we get to hang out tomorrow up in the mountains, and I hope you have a great rest of your trip.
Thank you so much.